Welcome to Too Much Scrolling Saturday Edition. We are sitting in the historic square in Woodstock, Illinois, the filming location for a certain Groundhog Day movie in 1993, and we're here at Le Petit Creperie, which is a lovely French restaurant on the square here in Woodstock. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenclaw.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around a French restaurant and talking about things that we hope are important to you. They're important to us, and that's why we came out here to Woodstock. It's kind of nice out there.
You mean this is not Punxsutawney?
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We were supposed to... This is Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, right?
Pennsylvania.
And all of the things that are happening here are all about Groundhog Day and all of the things. Very Pennsylvania-y.
Okay. I think the people in Punxsutawney, they picked this town down because it had such a beautiful downtown area.
Beautiful downtown. Woodstock is a great downtown. We have a great view here from the Le Petit Creperie, which is on the corner of the square. We can see everything's happening, and a lot of tourists walking around. They've put this place together in such a way that you can see all the filming locations from that movie from 1993.
They have, and it looks like that they have put together a... Right now, the film is showing at the local movie theater,
That's right. You
saw in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a booklet that you can get through. They've got people standing around the different sites that will explain what was going on in that movie. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. I don't know that we're in Woodstock, Illinois, of course. Do you know anybody else who's famous from Woodstock, Illinois?
Let's see if I can think of anybody famous from Woodstock, Illinois. The only thing that comes to mind is Snoopy, and I don't think that's a person.
All right, so Woodstock, Illinois is probably about 40, 50 miles right outside Chicago. So close enough to Chicago, but not quite a Chicago. It does have a train that goes out here, so you can commute, where a lot of commuters do. But people like this area because it's a rural community that's not so rural. But the person I'm thinking of is a guy that worked for the Tribune organization, was Chester Gould.
Oh.
Do you know who Chester Gould
sure,
is?
Sure, of course I do.
He was the writer and the artist for Dick Tracy.
There you go.
And so before he passed away, and after, I guess, Dick Tracy became a hit, he moved out here and his studio out here, and this is where he did all his fun stuff.
And that's where he developed the smartwatch. Apple went and stole the smartwatch from Woodstock, Illinois, and we're going to see our smartwatches sometime this year.
Exactly. I think Steve Jobs has a house out here, too, before he passed away, so he could steal all the...
The ideas. He's probably got a house everywhere, because there's so many great ideas out there. Steve Jobs needed to be everywhere to get all those great ideas. The smartwatch is going to change the world, just like Dick Tracy used it years ago.
That's right.
It's an interesting year. Let's talk about Groundhog Day. We're here to talk about Groundhog Day, and it was such a fun movie, wasn't it?
This was a great film.
22 years ago.
Was it that long ago?
22 years ago they made that movie. Bill Murray was here. Andy McDowell was here. Mm-hmm. They were filming that movie. It's amazing to walk around the square and to see all of the different locations, and they made such a grand movie out of such a small little piece of America.
Well, I did some research on this a number of years ago, and one of the things that I learned was that this story that they put together, I thought it was based on a short story. I thought it had to be something out there that they were pulling this movie from. No, this was an original story.
Huh.
And so, you know, you can't go back and say, oh, you know, XYZ... writer put this together, and because of this they enjoyed the short story, they wrote this movie around it. No, it seemed like that Ramis, I think, it wrote this movie,
correct?
And
the late and great Harold Ramis,
he passed away last year, didn't he?
He did. That was a sad moment.
All right, so you know, it's a shame that we lost this this person who wrote this film. He wrote a number of Stripes and things of that nature.
Some of the great comedies of the 80s. Some of the historic comedies.
That's right. So, you know, he was a generation before, I mean, ahead of us.
Okay.
If we consider ourselves Gen Xers. But he definitely, they had a way of looking at comedy that that definitely resonated with our generation.
That's right.
I really enjoyed how they put together the story. This idea of reliving the same day over and over and over, and to have it in a truly an American holiday, because Groundhog's Day is not celebrated at any other country.
That's right. That's
except for here.
One of the reasons why we're here in a French restaurant is because the French celebrate Crepe Day on the date that we use for Groundhog's Day.
Do they really?
Yes, and there's a whole reason why winter is going to be here longer or going to leave us earlier, just like we do with the groundhog, and it has to do with the crepe. And I don't know the story. Well, maybe we can get somebody to tell us the story of Crepe Day, but I don't know who. Maybe just some of the people that are standing around shaking their heads violently right now.
Well, I just had a crepe delivered to me with our favorite Cajun spices.
A Cajun crepe. That's one of the great things about this restaurant. La Petite Creperie has so many wonderful things. She's got Mrs. Kappas, Kathy Kappas, who's the owner here, has such a great menu, such a great variety of food, not just the frog legs, although frog legs are on the menu this morning, so there are...
because you demanded them?
That's right. There are plenty of options. It's a great place to hang out. Just the view of the square is right there, and here we are.
So let's talk about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's set up as a weatherman, and that is the Bill Murray character.
Bill Murray character comes into Punxsutawney to give the weather report because of the groundhog is going to report the weather.
And they've got to get out that evening because there's going to be a huge snowstorm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Murray does not want to be in Punxsutawney interviewing this road. He's a very successful weatherman.
And he is so Bill Murray. The character is just exactly the same as Bill Murray in almost every other part that he's played. He's just angry. Similar
in his parts. There's an arrogance to mm-hmm. them. There is he is obviously very aloof. He's very sure of his skills. And he is very dismissive of those around him that allow him to look so good. So he is truly this jerk character.
And, again.
Oh, of course. So he gets up. The bed and breakfast, obviously, that he's staying at is far greater than what the other people are staying who are helping him.
A very young Chris Elliott as the cameraman.
Oh, we love Chris Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Andy McDowell.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes and gives his speech. And each day the speech changes and changes. So initially he gives this speech about, this introduction to that's going to be live through the television station. That's just, you know, a regular broadcast way. As the movie progresses, it gets more and more either dark, dismissive. It gets, you know, junkier and junkier.
Yeah.
By the end of the movie, which... In fact, let me bring this up. How long is he stuck in this vortex?
And that's a question. We don't know an answer to that. There's lots of theories that he could be there for years doing the same day over and over and over again. It could be a lifetime.
Well, it could be longer than that. Harold Ramis suggested that it's at least 10 years because he masters the piano.
Okay.
So eventually... as Bill Murray's character stays over and over and over in this vortex, he goes through different stages. You know, a stage where he's very dismissive. There's a scene where he's sitting in front of Annie McDowell. He's eating donuts, and she's saying, "Well, don't you care about yourself?" He's smoking cigarettes. He's doing all these
because he knows that when he wakes up again in the morning, all of what he's chosen to do during the course of the day will just evaporate.
Sure. He does eventually get bored with that and goes to a different world, a different goal. And he learns everything about every person in the area, mm-hmm. in the town. Not only does he learn about every person in the town, he starts sort of categorizing what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. So he can become predictive. There's a scene where he's sitting with Annie McDowell and he's telling her that he leaves the same day over and over.
Mm-hmm.
He describes everything that's happening, and it's happening all around him.
Right.
There's a scene where he's sitting down in front of the television. They're watching the Jeopardy program, and he's answering all the questions after they're being answered, and then finally turns away from the screen to the people sitting around him, amazed. And he gives the answer before the question is asked. And they just you know, freak out a little bit.
Which brings me to the idea of another movie that had this same plot was the, and it's hard to even tell you the name of the movie because it's changed so many times, Live, Die, Repeat, that came out in 2014. When it was in the theater, they called it Edge of Tomorrow.
Okay.
And when they released it on DVD, they called it Live, Die, Repeat. This is all based on a story.
They changed the name?
They changed the name of this film when they released it in the next format. It's all based on an original story called All You Need Is Kill, which is a great title. All You Need Is Kill would have really brought us something. Edge of Tomorrow doesn't tell us much about this story.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, since Groundhog's Day is not celebrated anywhere else except for the United States, as a true, like, I think it's number one holiday, as we probably should tell all the people, our European listeners.
Right.
So it's such an important holiday.
It is in Woodstock, Illinois, I'll tell you that much.
Well it is for that. But they renamed it when they went to have the foreign releases of this film.
Really?
So they all had different names. And
they do that. That happens.
Okay. So getting back to this really quick, this vortex, there really isn't an answer to that. Harold Ramis said it at least had to be 10 years.
Wow.
But there's also theories out there that it could be 10,000 years. So, I mean, to get to know, we go through these stages where Bill Murray is dismissive of this. He's very self-centered about this. We go to the point where he gets bored with that. He's going to learn about these characters. He gets to a point where he's also going to be a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to, throughout the whole day, there's a homeless person that passes away. He's going to help this person live.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to, you know, save his life by doing the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and all that other stuff. He runs around and catches the cat that falls out of the tree. He's got a whole list of things that he has to run through the day. So he's racing his way through there. You know, this is after he's tried so hard to create a situation where Andie MacDowell falls in love with him through manipulating her by having all the right answers throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
which eventually falls apart because, you know, by the time you know every nuance in response you're going to get, you may get bored with it. It may be very similar to an actor doing the same play over and over and over for, you know, for a year or 2 years or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually turns to himself, where he's going to better himself.
This is after he goes through all those stages, including the scene where he steals the groundhog and drives off of a cliff.
Yeah, I didn't mention that. The point of driving off the cliff is he experiences death many times. So he drops the toaster into the bathtub and kills himself. He goes over the edge of the cliff with the after a high-speed chase. You know, lives a very risky point. So what do we get? We got a person. Most of us do not go through life and have the ability to experience the same thing over and over and over. And
in the way that we're looking at in the movie. Now, in real life, we do experience the same sorts of things over and over again, and we do have to learn from those experiences. We do need to make mistakes and find a way to make better choices the next time.
Well, that's going from youth, where you're not a wise person, but you may have a lot of this knowledge, to as grading over time, gaining greater knowledge, and then gaining your maturity and hopefully wisdom. But when we talk about that, our hope is that when we educate our young people, that they can speed up that maturity and hopefully that wisdom to make better decisions later on.
In very much the same way that Phil does in this movie, learning from his mistakes, learning those great things to do, those nice people things to do, and those not so great choices.
Well, it took him a long time. I mean, think about if we go with the theory of 10,000 years, he didn't learn this over a day or 2 days or 3 days. He relived this time for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually had to come to a a conclusion on how he was going to live his life. And he found that first he had to be self-centered. I had to gain greater skills or greater understanding. You know, he learned French poetry to impress Oh, good grief. I've lost her name. Annie McDowell.
Annie McDowell's character, whose name is Rita in the movie.
Okay. So Annie McDowell, who is just this gorgeous person, to, you know, eventually mastering the piano by showing up with this big wad of cash, kicking out the person taking the piano lessons so he could learn how to play piano.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll give you a little insight on that. Bill Murray learned enough piano to play in that scene.
Wow.
That's sonata or, you know, whatever he's playing. He didn't play at the end of the movie. He's playing in the band. He's not really playing there.
Okay.
But during that one scene where he's playing, you know, you look down at his fingers and he's playing the piano, he learned that just enough so he could give you a little convincing that he is learning piano.
Nice.
Let's, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about the characters in this movie, because these characters are memorable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Andy Griffith Show. You're like, oh, yes, I know these characters.
And your favorite, of course, the one that you've said 7 times on the way here and 10 times since we got to the square is...
Ned Ryerson.
Ned Ryerson.
All right, so Ned is this great character. Ned the Head, Ned the Belly Button Dancer. That's a great scene where Bill Murray doesn't remember him at all.
Right.
Doesn't care. What does he sell? Of course he's going to sell insurance.
Of course.
Bing!
The number of people walking around the square right now listening to Chip do some of these lines as he's walking down the square. This is what we did before we came into the restaurant. We walked around the square. We saw the puddle. That's the scene where Bill Murray learns where things are in this world and learns to avoid. There's a puddle.
And Ned laughs at him.
And Ned laughs at him. And the same.
Watch out for that first step. It's a doozy.
It's a silly little movie, but it's got such a deep philosophical storyline to it about growth, about learning, about finding humanity in your situation.
So going through this introduction where Ned sees Bill Murray's character walking down the street to he doesn't recognize him at all. Eventually, he punches him.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Murray's character just punches him as soon as he
just
sees
him. Just square in the nose, just without a word, just square... punches him.
The one part where he hugs him,
mm-hmm.
and then makes a pass at him, which is so awesome. It totally freaks out Ned. Ned's this introvert turned extrovert who's a panther who cannot do any wrong. He's obviously listened to a ton of self-help books.
Right.
And because of that, he's got this persona he plays as the insurance agent. And totally freaks him out. And eventually... Bill Murray's character becomes much more sympathetic to them. He does. I don't know if it's the right thing to do is to buy all these policies from him, but eventually that's what it comes out down to. He buys all these policies.
And again, it's the day resets every day, so he could spend all of his money every day and just live it again.
Well, and I think that's one of the things Bill Murray's character learns is that the impact he can have on someone else's life.
Mm-hmm.
That if I do this, I can truly make someone's, you know, feel better. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go and purchase everything someone sells you. But you know, that's, I think at the end, that's really where he comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a character in there that I mentioned to you in the Superman movie from Man of Steel from mm-hmm. a couple of years ago. He's General Zod. Okay, General Zod was in Groundhog's Day.
Nice.
And he was one of the, at the end of the movie, he's one of the young people who's at the big party where Bill Murray's playing the piano and eventually goes out. And he's a young man. He's getting married to this lady. And Bill Murray pulls out 2 tickets to WrestleMania that just blows this guy away. And, you know, they're like, oh my God, and they jump all over each other. And if you were an 18-year-old getting married, and someone gave you something that you valued, and everybody else is going, oh, WrestleMania. But for them, it was like, I mean, you might as well give them like the greatest, you know, I gave you front row seats to see the Super Bowl or to see your favorite band or whatever it was. This really, really means it. Well, as soon as he gives it to her, she jumps in his arms and wraps her legs around him. It's just such a fun scene where little things that Bill Murray's character learns make just such a deep emotional difference in the characters around them.
And that's a good lesson in life. We have all of these influences. We can help the homeless man sometimes.
Right.
But not every time.
Well, and in fact, that's what I think what he learns is that life happens. That, you know, at some point we all have to pass away. And maybe you know, there's something you could do for that person. And that's what Bill's trying to do. He's trying to play God at that moment. He says, okay, I know this person's going to pass away. What if I fed them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what if I...
Would that make a difference?
What if I clothed them? You know, what if I... Well, he made that gentleman's life better for that day.
Mm-hmm.
But he still couldn't take away the nature of the moment.
That's right.
And that's another part of... I mean, there's a lot of layers to learn in this film.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Chris Elliott's character.
Okay.
Who is kind of a slimy guy. I shouldn't say he's a slimy guy.
I don't think he's a slimy guy. I think he's a stereotype. I think he is the cameraman, the behind the scenes.
You're right. I'm going to take that back. Okay. All right. So, great. Go ahead. The behind the scenes guy. He's the guy that gave the $2 tip but took a dollar back. You know, it's all about
working man.
Well, just kind of. It's all about looks. All right. So we have Chris Elliott's character, who. Good point. He's a kind of a working man. Obviously, he hasn't made it yet. And when we have to recognize that people who work for news stations have multiple layers. The talent typically gets paid well, but the support staff, you know, they're if you're entry level, you're getting a very low wage.
It can be
at
a
times.
Big struggle, that's for sure. But those people are obviously so important to making the production. The people who know how to manage the camera and the sound system are very important to a production, as we find out when we do musicals.
Now, I had a gentleman, a friend of mine, who worked at a television station, and when I went down to where he lives, he invited me to sit on a live broadcast of a newscast.
Mm-hmm.
So like your television news. Now, I'm telling you right now, there is no, I mean, you are on or you're on. And those producers back there, I'm sitting down with the producer. You have to sit down, be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It is a team. There's a whole thing going on. The original anchor that I saw, he was fumbling through this ad lib, and you could hear the producer say, "We will never let him ad lib again." So there is a striking, it's a demanding. Mm-hmm. It's like a football game. It's like a basketball game. You are the coach. This is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It is intense because their goal is to give this incredibly heartfelt, passionate newscast that keeps you involved in watching.
That's right.
So and you've got your commercials that come up, you've got your shows that come up, and at the end they all get together in a group, and what they're talking about is, what did we do well today? What can we improve on tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, who are we going to blast because we did something? But they had just had another station move to the area that was going to compete with their news. So when we're dealing, you know, in this Groundhog Day moment, and looking at this team, this is part of the greater team. It's very intense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an excitement and an energy, a lightning that goes through a broadcast.
You should see. You should sit in the back of the stage when we're putting on our musicals. That same team feeling that you describe in terms of sports happens in our work,
mm-hmm.
where we need to work together. We need to know what each other is thinking. We need to know what's going to happen and have no surprises. Everything has to be planned out just right. And there's always going to be surprises. There's always going to be, in the case of sports, the other team is going to do things we didn't expect.
Sure.
In the case of musicals, there's always going to be something that happens that we didn't expect. Somebody's going to drop something. Something's going to break. What do you do?
A sneeze out in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
A person who forgets their lines accidentally. They get off track.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beauty of a live performance. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why live performances are so powerful. Because at some point, you can truly grab magic. Or what Phil ran into when... I'm sorry, Phil. What Bill Murray's character ran into...
That's his name.
Oh, Phil.
Yeah.
Okay. What Bill Murray's character ran into is eventually you get bored with it, and it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that he eventually learned. He put together this beautiful, heartfelt... moment, you know, tears are running down Chris Elliott's eyes, tears are running down Andy McDowell's eyes, and you know, he puts it all together. Eventually, he comes to an understanding that he had a place to play as part of this team, and they expected the best, and he gave them the best because He had worked on it for as long as he worked on it.
Because that was his responsibility in life. That was his position in life. And that's an interesting message in this movie, too, is you have a place in this existence, and you need to find out what your job is, and you need to do your job.
Well, I say that when you're putting together a team. There are chiefs and there are Indians. Mm-hmm. And you have to recognize what your part is. Because sometimes you're the chief, and you've got to be the tough person. Or sometimes you have to be the leader. And they expect you to be the quarterback. You're expected to carry it. So I'm the star of this musical, or I'm the star of this play. I'm expected to act a certain way. And if you don't, and this is the challenge with somebody like Lindsay Lohan, is that she was the quarterback, and what they found out is she couldn't handle it, and she fumbled it, mm-hmm. and it destroys it. And if you're an actor, and you are the person destroying this film, you know, they're not going to take the risk on you.
Right. It's a lot of pressure, too.
It is.
It's a lot of pressure being put on the shoulders of somebody who needs to be at their best.
There are many, many actors and actresses, I think we used to use the word actors now, mm-hmm. who basically talk about their time after they became famous and lamenting. And I don't mean the woe is me type of thing. They worked real hard to get there, but the price was the ability to not have privacy. And that's an important thing.
It is.
So let's get back to Annie McGow's character, which is such a interesting character. She's a person who takes her job very seriously. She obviously has ambition to move up.
She has a great humanity to her. She cares about people. She cares about Phil in the movie, who doesn't seem to care back.
He's a person who's that doesn't allow people to care for him. Mm-hmm. He's very easy to dismiss, other than being a very talented person that on the outside, and if you don't know them, he relates to people. Mm-hmm. But when you're around him, you realize he's a jerk all the time.
That's right.
So she saw through that and recognized that she was going to be part of the team, and she was going to get the best out of him, which a good producer does, and she did the best what she could at that time. Eventually, my favorite scene with her is when Bill Murray and Annie McDowell are sitting at the bar, and they order the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Murray eventually
<Go ahead. laughs>
orders what she loves, a sweet vermouth on the rocks with a twist. And she turns to him and says, "Oh, how could you order this drink? You know, obviously, that's my favorite drink." And so it comes, and Bill Murray... then she asks, what are we going to toast to? And he says something dismissive. But the next time, he of course, is going to say the prayer that we all do. He's going to say a prayer to world peace before having his drink. And she's once again, she's taken in by this. But Bill Murray, when he drinks, has a sip of this drink, he's got this look of just like, oh my goodness, this disgusting look, mm-hmm. and then turns to her and gives her like the smile, like, oh, this of course is the greatest drink ever.
That's what we do sometimes. Sometimes we try to please people, we try to match up with other people, and we try to get that connection between people, and sometimes it's a real struggle.
And this is Phil's learning curve, mm-hmm. because at that point he's being devious. He's trying to manipulate her, but eventually I don't know what ends up happening. Maybe that scene does not. Maybe his last time going through this vortex, he doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
But where it ends up is he eventually tells her, and obviously she thinks he's crazy. While he's not manipulating her, she comes up to his room at this bed and breakfast. And they're sitting there taking cards and throwing them into the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just talking. And he says, well, you'll wake up tomorrow morning and you won't remember any of this. And we'll just live this day again. But there is a calmness and there is there's an understanding that that's okay. And, of course, our film ends with them waking up in each other's arms. It's a love story. It's an American love story. What can I say?
There you go. And it's there for us. It's a 22-year-old movie, and we can watch it anytime, and we can learn. That's the amazing part about this. It's such a silly little movie, but Harold Ramis put together this big philosophical look into life, into creation, into what we're doing here in this silly little, funny little movie.
Oh, I agree. This is, like I said, very insightful. And most of us don't get the opportunity to live that same moment and relive the same mistake all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we don't get the chance to, the hope would be is that we become wise before we hurt somebody.
Right.
So as a young person, we tend to take risks that as an older person we would not take.
Right. Because we've learned, mm-hmm. or at least we've seen somebody else who's made the wrong decision and learned from somebody else's choice instead of our own.
And I do think that the message is to recognize your space in life and, mm-hmm. and being happy and comfortable in your spot. If you are a person who is a musician that does a concert, or as a singer or in a play, if you go and you're singing the same songs, you can understand how that wears you down. You know, I'm the weatherman, I'm giving the same, you know, there was a joke in L.A. Story with Steve Martin, and in this film he's a weatherman and he's in San Diego, or I'm sorry, he's in L.A. What am I talking about? It's L.A. Story. But every day he has to come on and say it's sunny. And that's, in fact, Gwen Stefani was talking about growing up in L.A. and saying, well, what do you do when you get up and every day's paradise? Well, that's what California, the weather in California is like. Well, most of us go through life and we get tired of having to make the same presentation or use the same moments over and over and over and over again. And that's where you get a lot of humor. When Ben Stein's giving the economics lecture to Ferris Bueller, and the response is anyone. He's obviously bored with the material.
Yep.
And the students, of course, are feeding the energy or feeling the energy of that mm-hmm. Moment. And that may be a time to move on, or maybe it's time to reinvent yourself. So most of us are not Madonna, and every few years have a way to reinvent ourselves.
That's right.
Any other observations you want to make from this this beautiful town?
It's a beautiful town. It's a great town. You can come and visit anytime and take the tour. I'm sure they'll be here even when it's not Groundhog Day. But this week, since it's Groundhog Day, Le Petit Creperie is open for breakfast and lunch on Monday from 7 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. And they really would love to have you come out and visit on the square on Monday. The groundhog will be here and will either see its shadow or not, and that will absolutely mean something important.
Well, it means something important to me because we live up here. If we were down in, say, South Florida, then it's always beautiful.
That's but right.
All we want is warm weather to come sooner than later, and that means it doesn't snow like in July when the Cubs are playing.
I have been at a Cubs game where it was snowing. That was not fun. All right, Chip. I think we've learned enough from Groundhog Day. I think we can live this day over and over again. You can listen to this podcast over and over again.
You can survive another day over and over,
over and over and over again.
I got you, babe.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenplug.
And we'll see you again tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow.